Hello and welcome to episode 2 of the Wise Way to Yoga podcast, hosted by Cecile Rayner and myself, Mona Kelly. For those who don't know us, Cecile is an Alexander Technique teacher certified by the American Society of Teachers of the Alexander Technique. Cecile has been practicing in the Boston area for over 20 years. She's also trained as a Thai yoga therapist and is the author of the book, The Wise Way to Yoga, our main inspiration and base for this podcast. And I'm Mona Kelly. I'm a multi-passionate yoga teacher certified in both Vinyasa and Kundalini yoga. And I'm also a student of Cecile, which means that my yoga classes, which I teach exclusively online, integrate the Alexander Technique principles so that your yoga can be fun and safe. I also practice Vedic astrology, one of the most profound self-knowledge tools, in my humble opinion. And we're both French, but don't worry, this podcast is in English. And in this second episode, The Origins of Yoga Part 2, Cecile and I discuss the 19th century secret ingredient that influenced modern fitness, including yoga. We also tackle the no pain, no gain mentality that has infiltrated today's yoga world, how challenging it can be to move away from it, and the solution we bring for an injury-free yoga practice. Let's listen.
Hello, Cecile, and welcome to episode 2 of the Wise Way to Yoga podcast. So let's jump right in.
Okay, thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. We're co-hosts, so yeah. Thank you for having me at your house.
Yes.
What is the, I'm just curious, what is the secret ingredient that started modern fitness, including yoga?
So you might be surprised at my answer.
I'm sure I will be.
But the secret ingredient is mirrors.
Okay.
So what do I mean? Why? So I say mirrors because as we explained in the previous podcast, yoga came to our world in the 19th century, and that was the time of the beginning of fitness. And one of the big ingredients that brought about this is, on the one hand, there was the Industrial Revolution, because a lot of people, even if they were in royalty, had money to spend. So they would buy artwork, they would travel, things like that. And they discovered the Olympic athlete, as I mentioned before.
Yeah, those beautiful Greek
yes,
athletes.
Yes, exactly, with beautifully modeled bodies. But also, the 19th century is the first time that people had access to mirrors.
And oh, people, very interesting.
Yeah, okay. So people started looking at themselves in a totally new way, in a way that was not in their awareness before. And and of course, the men started looking at themselves, comparing themselves to those beautiful athletes, and decided, ooh, I want to look like that.
I have some work to do.
Yeah. So that's when they started, you know, developing, trying to do everything they could to develop their body mass, mm-hmm. you know, muscle mass. And they were in India before yoga came back. Yoga had been in the dark for centuries.
Interesting.
Maharaja of Mysore actually had hired a German gym. They considered them as gymnasts in those days, those bodybuilders, and had created a gym in his palace for that bodybuilder to teach his sons.
Okay.
And you could find bodybuilders in the streets performing and impressing people.
And this probably also is corresponding with the money and the traveling, right? So there were more and more tourists
yes.
in India that enjoyed those kinds of displays.
Yes. I'm and sure. Well, so there were two things. They were the Indian people who enjoyed the display of the bodybuilders. And then there was the tourists who enjoyed the display of the extreme ascetics oh. and the fakirs, and would come back home and talk about that, mm. which is why, so on the one hand, like we mentioned last time, it is because those bodybuilders started invading the awareness in India that yoga was revived by Krishnamacharya. But it's also why Vivekananda was the first Indian who came to America, and he wanted to clarify that Hinduism was a regular religion, and that yoga was a serious something, and it was not what the tourists were talking about by what they saw in the streets. So Vivekananda was, last time we talked about the difference between Hatha Yoga, classical yoga, and Buddhism as three offshoots of yogic yoga. Mm-hmm. So Vivekananda was the first one bringing this awareness of what classical yoga is, meditation yoga, mastering your mind. But he didn't stay very long. He just came for that event, but then he went back to India. The second person that came, in fact, there might have been an overlap, was Paramahansa Yogananda. And he was very well known for his autobiography of a yogi. And that was the first book that, even though it was an autobiography, it also was the first time that a yogi was explaining the overlap between energy, spirituality, quantum physics, all of that. So that was
forward thinking.
Yes, quite forward thinking, and that was the lineage, the starting lineage for classical yoga and mind mastering. So they did use in their practice. They do use some body. Some yoga poses, a little bit of Hatha yoga, but they're basically considered body mudras and hand mudras that are designed to make the energy flow to support a spiritual practice and a mastering of the mind.
Okay, so those were the physical aspect of yoga, then was more of a preparation for more meditative practices.
Yes, so initially the poses were mainly a way to keep the body limber through long periods of meditation. Exactly.
Okay.
So the thing is, because of all this, when yoga came to Europe and America, people, the initial yoga pioneer yoga teachers,
and we're still talking about the 19th century when it
no. So what I'm saying is, because of what happened in the 19th century.
Okay.
By the time modern Hatha Yoga started in Europe and in the US and Canada, and you know,
mm-hmm.
They were putting all yoga teachers that came from India on a pedestal, and they
believed were the gurus,
the
right?
gurus, Namaste. And they didn't argue. They just tried to learn, and they tried to copy, but not being aware that these gurus were also influenced by the no pain, no gain of the extreme ascetics.
Yeah.
Nor did they realize that they were influenced by the patriarchal society of India. So a lot of the pioneer yoga teachers and practitioners ended up learning and practicing and teaching things that actually were hurting the body, and which is why a lot of them ended up with hip problems, knee problem, sometimes a need for surgery. So that was a problem of the pioneer yoga teachers of the 20th century. But it's not something, despite gentle yoga and all this, which we will talk about at a different point, there is still a very crucial part missing, which and as a result, we still have yoga teachers who are in risk of serious hip problems. And in fact,
There was this recent BBC article that you're probably referring to. That
yes,
was published in November this year.
2019.
Yeah. That's talking about the risk of serious hip problems practicing yoga, mostly among yoga teachers, but everyone is obviously at risk. As long as, you know, you repeatedly push your body into prescribed positions when your physiology prevents it. Whether it's a yoga teacher or a yoga practitioner, that's definitely an issue that was raised in this article. So yes, I can relate to the no pain, no gain issue that you're talking about.
I'm glad we're talking about that, because one thing that I want to say about that is, you know, now sometimes you know, I teach yoga teachers, and I know a lot of people who do yoga, and when I ask them, do you believe in no pain, no gain, sometimes they're like, oh no, I'm not into no pain, no gain. But then when I see them practice, I see that they have replaced no pain, no gain by no strain, no gain.
Okay.
In other words, they say, oh no pain, no gain, I don't believe, but they feel like if they don't strain a little bit, they're not getting the best of their practice. But no strain, no pain, strain is a precursor to pain. So if you think strain is necessary, you will experience pain at some point.
Yeah, so I wanted, actually, this makes me think of something that I'm hearing quite a bit is in yoga classes, and it's quite popular with the practice of yin yoga, actually, is to find your edge. And I'm just not sure what they mean in that, because it's the concept of finding your edge and not going beyond that edge. But to get to that edge, you still need to strain a little bit. That's the way I interpret it, but I'd love to have your opinion on that.
Yeah, so so first of all, I don't think it's specific to yin yoga. I think in a lot of yoga classes where I went, I heard that thing, find your edge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
I hear that a lot too.
Yes. And be comfortable with the uncomfortable. So that's, we'll talk about that as well.
Yeah.
But with yin yoga, I actually had a student who, she was in pain all the time. And she said the only time she was not in pain was when she was going to yin yoga, not realizing that it was yin yoga that was keeping her pain alive. Why? Because when she was going to yin yoga, she kept stretching to the next level. So that stretch felt so good.
Okay.
But after the fact, the body was reacting and she never made the connection. But then she was getting worse and worse. And, you know, I'm the one who told her, I think you need to stop that. It may not be the right thing for you. She may have had a hypermobile body, mm-hmm. and hypermobile bodies can handle stretching even less than regular people, even though at first it seems like they can do more, but that gets them into trouble.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot.
Yeah, what they need is to, that's why what I teach, activate your whole body intelligence when you do yoga. That's good for hypermobile people as well as anybody else, because your body will develop flexible strength.
Mm.
So you can still get stronger, which they need, but without sacrificing their flexibility or enhancing their flexibility.
It's like bamboo.
Yeah.
Explain like yourself. The bamboo. Well, the bamboo that is very flexible in his its bending.
Yes.
But it's very strong, doesn't break. That's the image that comes to my mind when you mention that.
Exactly. Flexible strength. Absolutely. And you know, bushes, branches, mm-hmm. like that, you know, the trees can waver in the wind, but they, you know, they can be strong as well. So last time we had talked about the different branch, Hatha yoga, classical yoga, and I had brought Buddhism as, again, one offshoot of yogic yoga, which used to include all of it. And so how did that happen? Well, in California, there were a lot of Chinese immigrants that came at the 19th century, and they brought Buddhism with them. And Buddhism actually at the time had a positive influence on yoga, because it was all about compassion, listening. And so if we had kept that, we could have been in a really good shape. But what happened is that yoga became an industry. And as a result, people started focusing more on what they were wearing and how strong they were getting, and there were so much commercials. It became very commercialized, and
well, I'm still influenced by the bodybuilder,
absolutely,
era.
By the fitness industry, mm-hmm. which is strongly influenced by the bodybuilders, and so all of that, created a problem, because when yoga was influenced by Buddhism, it was bringing back the dimension that was in yogic yoga, that you're not using yoga to force your body or to train it to fight or anything. It was more a question of being limber, so you can sit in meditation. And yoga is about self-introspection and understanding yourself. And so those yoga classes were very much in the spirit of yoga, the initial spirit of yoga. But as it became an industry and we started seeing yoga studio everywhere, things started changing, and people started going to yoga and it felt good, but then there were some issues with body image, which we will talk about next time.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great topic.
Yeah. But so modern Hatha yoga has been evolving out of the yoga that came to us from India, but that was not ancient yoga. It was rediscovered yoga influenced by bodybuilders and modified by many teachers along the way. So even though yoga teachers love to say, oh, yoga is a 5,000 years practice and all this, people have to be aware that modern Hatha yoga is not 5,000 years old. It's not, it's a modern concoction, and it's very much influenced by a society that's very much in their heads, and therefore very disconnected from their body. And as much as I value yoga teachers, I love working with them. I think they are doing an amazing job to teach people. But I also have found that a lot of them are very much in their heads, and they let their mind tell their body what to do instead of really letting their whole body intelligence be in the driver's seat.
Yes, so we started this podcast talking about the secret ingredient that start modern fitness, including yoga. We talked about the mirrors.
Yes.
Now, I feel that you have your own secret ingredient,
yes.
to prevent the no pain, no gain / injury. Mm-hmm. I mean, at the worst of it, it's the injury, but even just pain, that's very
even
uncomfortable.
Discomfort.
So what's that secret?
Yes, so that's why I think that when I'm teaching, and in my book, in my online courses, in my private sessions, is how to activate your whole body intelligence, mm-hmm. because that should be your first teacher. So yes, you can go to a class and learn from a yoga teacher about the basics of poses, but it shouldn't be. You shouldn't focus on the form as the end goal. You should use the form as a guide and not as a goal. And also, if you want to be a wise yogi, and I have a manifesto of the wise yogi, so anybody interested can ask for it and I will send them a copy. But if you want to be a wise yogi, you understand that the form is a goal, is a guide, not a goal. And you learn how to activate your whole body intelligence so that you perform the pose in a way that's in line with your personal whole body intelligence. And the pose will look very different from one person to the other.
Absolutely.
And but it is not worth it, for example, if you do a downward dog and you're so stuck on keeping your legs straight, you are going to hurt your back, even though you think you're helping your back because you feel some stretching here, but your hip joint socket are locked and it's not serving you. So when you know how to use your body as a whole integrated self, the whole integrated self that you are, your joints will have some freedom in there. They're not going to be
yes,
locked. And
absolutely.
Therefore the energy can flow. And to loop back to Buddhism and Asian practices, I often tell my yoga teachers, you have to practice yoga the way they tend to teach Tai Chi, in the sense that in Tai Chi, even if they don't do it right, but at least in the way they teach it, they know that the goal is to let the energy flow. Whereas in yoga, there's a lot of holding, locking,
pull the belly
pulling,
in.
Yes, all those things.
Squeeze your glutes.
Exactly.
And just something as simple as that is very well intended, such as pull the shoulders down, can actually create a lot of tension.
Yes.
So I never say in my instructions, pull the shoulders down.
Yes.
Because that
any instruction that focuses on body parts alone is going to be a problem.
Yeah.
That's
the
really
key
the bottom
one.
Line.
Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely.
And it doesn't mean you don't work on body parts. It only means that you do it within the big picture. And that's what
yes.
we've lost is
yes.
the big picture.
Yeah.
And that's, yeah, that's the critical missing piece that needs to be brought back for people to do yoga better, to do fitness better, to sit at their computer better, to do anything they do better.
Yes, and I think it has, and we touched on it a little bit, but I think it does have a strong connection with body image, and not only the body image, but the way we treat our bodies as more as a tool or as a machine rather than as an intelligent self, intelligent whole.
Organism,
Yes, but that will focus on our next episode.
Absolutely. There's a lot to say about body image and yoga.
And you mentioned that when you do your interventions at yoga teachers training, that piece is extremely relevant for people. People fall in love with your teachings, mostly from that hook.
Yeah,
correct?
Because you know when I bring up this topic at the very beginning of the special workshop that I do for trainees, I ask them before I even teach anything. I ask them what is their story, if they're willing to share. I never force anybody, but what is their story, their life story with their body image? And when they each tell me their story, some of them end up crying because everybody has had a really tough time with their body, no matter what they look like. They can be very slender or not.
Absolutely.
They have a tough time with that. And the reason why I include this in those trainings is because if yoga teachers are not aware of that story, then it's running the show. And therefore, they're going to overdo without even being aware of it. And they're going to teach others to overdo without intending to do that. So that is a big piece of what I address in my book, in my teaching.
That's a great way to conclude.
Mm-hmm.
So as usual, we will put the links to our websites, book in the description below. So if you want to contact any one of us, please, you will have all the information there, and do so. Thank you very much. Thank you, Cecile.
Thank you, Mona.
Bye.